Marion Ross
and Paul Michael.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI,
Kansas City Community Radio.
Support for KKFI 90.1 provided by Californos, the Pika Jacks, all the way from Italy. Monday, April 20th at Californos in Westport, downstairs in the saloon at 8 p.m. The Pika Jacks on Monday, April 20th. Begin the rock and roll at 8 p.m. Info at californos.com.
Finally, you were there, spellbound again. As a little...
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Well, hello to all of you out there listening. Welcome to the program. You're listening to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Another glorious day out there. It may rain later, but for now, it's great. See, I like it a little bit on the cool side, not too hot.
Yes.
And we'll see what happens the rest of the day. As you listen to us here on KKFI, your community radio station, and here on the Arts Magazine Show, we talk about everything going on. Well, we try. Can't cover everything. At first, I foolishly thought years ago I could cover everything. Can't do it. But the people that are most diligent get on the show. And one of the more diligent people, at least he schedules a long ways ahead of time.
That's true. We do that, don't we? That's true. Yes.
He's the artistic director of Spinning Tree Theater. They have a lot of really interesting shows that they bring our way. And they are producing and putting on, beginning Thursday, April 23rd, just a few days away, Fiddler on the Roof.
Hi. Yes.
Without tradition, life would be as shaky as a fiddler on
the roof.
That's right.
Yes.
That is opening later this week. And he brought along with him Nancy Nail. Nancy
Hello.
Nail. A little tidbit on Nancy. She opened and closed the American Heartland Theater.
That was my first show there and my last show.
Do you remember the very
You're
last,
welcome. You remember and the, you're welcome.
Do you remember the very first show?
No, I mean, that was my first show.
Oh.
It took me 15 years to get in, and I closed the place down.
Okay, well, very good for you.
But that's not going to happen with Spinning Tree Theater.
Oh. No, no.
It's their fourth year, and they are strong as ever.
They're very successful. You pick really intriguing shows.
Thank you. Yeah, with Fiddler on the Roof, you know, we're celebrating its 50th anniversary, and it is one of the most beautiful pieces. The book, I consider the book of Fiddler on the Roof one of the best books of a musical.
Absolutely.
It is timeless and universal.
Yeah. Book by Joseph Stein.
Mm-hmm.
Music by Jerry Bock. Lyrics by Sheldon
Harnick.
See, my printing, it wasn't very good. With all respects to Sheldon's family. but a very intriguing storyline. We hear about... You know, every springtime, at least, we hear the stories about how the Jewish people were moved around, persecuted, suffered all around the world for many years. One of the places this happened was
centuries.
In Russia.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jewish people have always been a displaced people. And, you know, commonly we hear more about the Holocaust than anything, but all the pogroms that were happening in Eastern Europe about 30 to 40 years before that, we don't hear that about as much. But it's always been a people that have been evicted from their communities. I think what's also really interesting is the Jewish people have always been a small community in a larger society, always sort of surrounded by something that they just never felt, that they had never had their own dominion, that, you know, they never had their own place. And we were always in a position where any second we would have to move.
Right.
So, you know, in Eastern Europe, the shtetl was that community that we formed as a group of people.
What's a shtetl?
A shtetl is essentially a small Jewish town. It's a small Jewish community that we had, and that's all we had, really. And that's really what we talk about in Fiddler, is that tradition. We even talk about that in Anatevka, a pot, a pan. What is, and
right.
we sort of question, what is this community in Fiddler on the Roof?
Yeah.
So any moment we were dependent on each other.
Yeah.
And the relationships that we all have, it's just such a wonderful, warm story. It's just, everybody thinks, oh, it's Matchmaker, I know that song, or Tradition, I know that song. But it's so much about relationships and the family of Tevye and Golda and their daughters and what real things that happened with the Matchmaker, which is what I play, Yenta, the Matchmaker. And everybody has a nice circle around them, their own story, plus how the relationship is with everybody else in the town,
right.
You know, and how they react to different things, even though they all really are they're on the same team, even though they may bicker about this and this and this. When it comes down to it, at the end of the evening, we are family.
We are family.
And Tevye, we have to stick together.
All that we have. It's true. And it's all based on, you know, Shalom Aleichem's stories about Tevye the dairyman. And so it's also really kind of nice to have those as tools, because we talk about the changing of tradition. And it's really about Tevye, who is trying to hold on to his tradition but also follow his heart. And those are two things that are, you know, fighting each other throughout that. And you fall in love with this man, and you fall in love with his wife, because you see them reaching out to their daughters. And it's, and again, like, you know, the world changes. That's what we see in this.
And you want to just hold tight, and it's like, well, don't hold too tight.
Right.
Because things are going to change. Is it 1905 it takes place?
Yes, 1905.
And
there was so much happening.
And so our Tevye, we are blessed to no end with Gary Neal Johnson, and our Golda is Julie Harris Shaw. Tom Lancaster is
Laser Wolf.
Yeah. And we get such great people in this. The youth in this, I'm so impressed by them.
Yeah.
You have Hoddle and Model.
Mm-hmm.
And keep going. You know?
Yep.
You're doing good.
I lose it after a while.
Start with Seidel and Model, and then you've got Seidel. And Hoddle and Perchik. Perchik is our student that comes from the outside world, a student from Kiev who comes into this village of Anatevka, who kind of comes in and shakes things up a little bit, really, even as the daughters are also changing. He comes in and says, you know, you're all set in your own ways, but you can't be blind to what's happening in the world around you. You need to look at that. And so what happens is, again, you have a community of Anatevka that is dependent on each other, but is also forgetting about what's going on in the world.
Outside
of Anatevka. And he comes in and says, you're going to have problems. You're going to be displaced very soon. You're going to have to leave Anatevka, which is what happens.
And just if we need to put a little factual basis on it, the czars were in power, and the czar wanted to move them. Do we know why? Are we clear on that?
I think, I mean, obviously the czar was in power. It was a dictatorship, and the Society of Russia was was fighting for socialism. We've been fighting that for a long time. Yeah. Was really trying to, you know, take away and bring equality. There's a line that Perchik says that it's like one day the rich people's money will be ours. It's the one time in the show where we really talk about, you know, the possibility of socialism and what it could be. And to digress a little bit, when we're delving into Fiddler on the Roof, I was able to delve into my history.
Oh, and, now that would be interesting. Your family goes back?
Yeah, absolutely. My great-grandpa Joe really was a Perchik in many ways. He was a student who in 1908, at the age of 19, fled for America because he was being drafted to fight for Russia. And, of course, that was a country that was persecuting his people.
Mm-hmm.
So he left. But in 1928, he brought my great-aunt, my grandma, and his wife back to the small town of Starokonstantinov in the Ukraine, and was moved to go back there to sort of see if he could help with, you know, the world as it was changing.
Progress.
So it's really interesting. And my great-aunt, who just passed away this last summer, was very, very close to her. She left a book. She wrote a book for the last 15 years of her life. And there's a whole chapter devoted to 1928 when she went back. They moved from Philadelphia to this small little town, unpaved, you know, talking about, you know, mud up to their ankles when they would come in, and just describing the whole thing, which we describe in Fiddler on the Roof. her uncle was a tailor. She used to sit in his shop. It's really amazing to, you know, to go back and say, oh my gosh, because it puts a face on a lot of this stuff. And it's what was going on at the time.
Yeah, and the Ukraine now is the center of problems.
Exactly.
It kind of goes back and forth over the years. Of course, history does that.
Yeah.
History goes back and forth all the time.
And what they ended up doing, which has happened a lot, is they blamed the Jewish people for the uprising against the Tsar, even though it was a lot more than that. It's the people that, you know, people turn to and say, you're to blame for this.
Right.
And that's where all the pogroms came, and it's gotten worse. And so there was this whole, mass immigration from Russia to America that started, roughly around 1889 or early 1900 to about 1917, I think it was. So Fiddler on the Roof takes place right in the middle of all of this. And you kind of get the idea that Anatevka is kind of like, they kind of play it as if it's one of the last places that you're being pushed
right.
out of.
Yeah. And pushed around, they were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just there, all over the world, essentially. There's a history of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true.
It's all part of history. Now, Nancy plays the matchmaker.
This
was a tradition to marry off your daughters in this way? Would you have gone for that in your younger days?
Oh, no. No. I go for love all the time, and it's got to be somebody that you love. But what's interesting is I was out of the business for a little while, and then I was so excited they were doing Fiddler because my very first monologue, which we have to have for auditions. I think I was maybe a freshman in high school. One of the first things in Drama 101, you had to pick a monologue, and my teacher picked out Yenta's monologue. When she first comes into the room and she's going, bop, 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 and poor Golda says, uh-huh. And then I go, bop, 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 and she just runs on and on. She lost her husband, Aaron, so she's a widow, and she had no children. He could not give me children. So I think she's more than just a motor mouth and trying to, it's her business. Just like he's a milkman. There's a model, the tailor. That's her business.
Everybody has their roles.
And that's how she survives as basically a single woman in Anatevka. She's a widow, so she's always in black and mourning. But not having children, I think she probably gets a real kick and a real gift of matching children up, even if they're 17, 16, even early, I think she enjoys that, and it's not just a nitpicky thing and being a know-it-all. I think she understands things, and I think part of her charm is, she's got to be multidimensional because it would be boring. And I also get to play Fru Masera, which is like completely the other direction, which I am adoring, and she's the crazy... She was not a nice woman when she was alive, but she's a dead ghost that comes back.
Ah.
Yeah, so I get to belt a whole bunch of crazy stuff, which is awesome. Awesome. She's the
sequence.
Widow of Laser Wolf, who was one of the first ones that I tried to match up with Seidel.
Yeah, now how does she go about matchmaking these? Does she draw straws? I mean, what does she do?
No, I think she probably, she doesn't get into the whole huge long of it. It's like these two boys... let's just go ahead and match them up now. And let's get it on paper because I need my fee. Because they're good boys. They're from fine homes. They're learned boys. And what more could you ask for?
What more could you want?
Yeah. No husband is, the worst husband's better than no husband at all.
Right. And
God forbid.
she does kind of represent that because, again, Pertchik comes into this world. All three daughters are either leaving home or going with, are marrying somebody for love.
Right.
What a concept.
Well,
we have a whole thing. It's like Golda and Tevye didn't meet each other until the day of their wedding. And so Yenta, in a way, represents a little bit of that old, what else do you need?
And she's holding on to that. That's what she does. That's what she does best.
She's got a dowry. He's got money. You're fine.
Yes, right. Come on. That'll come later. Fine.
Exactly.
Now you have Gary Neal Johnson playing the role of Tevye. How'd you manage to snag him?
Well, actually, this was probably about a year and a half. We were at a party just hanging out. And it was on, Fiddler has been on our list, of shows that we want to try. And Gary says, Tevye is one of my bucket roles. And
you jumped on that, huh?
Fits exactly.
Oh my gosh, outstanding!
It fits like a glove. when you've got that person, that it's like this is a role that you are meant to play, and you're meant to play it right now. where you are in life. It's exactly what it is. We were just chatting, and it just became that. Fell right into place.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the other people in the show. Julie Shaw.
Of course. Julie Shaw. And we've worked with Julie Shaw, you know, on several occasions. Natural Choice for Golda. Mm-hmm. Once again. Again, the right time in her life to play this role. Again, felt very, very, very natural choice. We've got, you know, again, Nancy as Yent. Tom Lancaster is playing Laser Wolf. Our daughters are Cammie Rogers as Seidel, Megan Herrera as Hava, Sarah Bel-Hawari as Hoddle. You've seen them all in many, many shows in many different places, too.
Sure.
It's a really, really great group. Bob Waring is playing Motto.
Again. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Ready for that role.
Let's talk about some of the songs. This is one of those shows where people know the songs. They might not necessarily connect it with the show. This one probably more likely that they would. But of these songs that they would know.
God, you know, of course, Matchmaker. Mm-hmm. If I Were a Rich Man, a song that never grows old, that everybody understands. And
well, Tradition, too.
Tradition. Of course. Of course.
I have your arms up. I have my arms up. Yeah. Andy, you'd be very proud of me.
She does.
My posture's good and my arms are up.
And your arms are up. chest lifted. And that's what that is. Exactly. Tradition is all about pride.
Yep.
And that was not in the original. It was in the original production, but it was not in the original script. That was something that Jerry Robbins realized. We need to have something. I think the show is just going to start with a tradition of getting ready for the Sabbath. I can't remember the name of the song, but it was about tradition in essence, but just specifically about the Sabbath and that one day. And he needed to, you know, he looked at the book and he was basically saying, what is this about? What is this show about, and how can we show it right from the start? It's about tradition. So let's bring the whole community together, and it just works so well. Because right away we're telling the audience, this is what we're about. Mm-hmm. This is who we are as a community. We're joined, and we are a small community. I was saying earlier, it's a big, intimate show. It's a big show about a small community of people.
And a lot of people talk, well, they talk about their small communities. They're talking about the physical place. This can't be the case for these people. It has to be the community as the people, not necessarily the physical place, the community.
Right, because, again, they can be displaced at any minute. So you can't really call your a house a home. You can't really define your home as location. Mm-mm. As much mm-hmm. as the people that you're with.
And it's the largest show you've done.
It is the largest show
as far
we've
as
done.
Cast.
Yes, 27 people, including our band. And that's also something that, you know, Spinning Tree, you know, loves to look at a story and you know, really obviously get to the root of it. And when we looked at this one, we said, again, this is an intimate story that people are used to seeing on the Starlight stage and in huge productions, but it's not really about that, and it's Hevka. And so what we did is we took our band and made it a klezmer band, which is very traditional. Klezmer band was always what played at ceremonies, at weddings, and it's that really very...
And we have an accordion, I'm just going to say.
And we have an
Angie's
accordion, so Angie will pick up the accordion for several numbers and kind of play that. So we have that traditional Jewish feel of that. And what we've done is we've taken them and put them into the community. So rather than them being in a pit or mm-hmm. always upstage in an area we don't see, they come into
They're in
the
costume
space.
And everything.
They're
it's
in
awesome.
Costume. They run around.
They're part of us.
Of the community, which is what Fiddler on the Roof is talking about.
Yeah, did Angie Benson, the Angie you were speaking mm-hmm. of, did she have to specially pick these members of the orchestra?
Yeah, well, we did. We knew the sound. We basically said the sound is clarinet, and it's been a bunch of different instruments. I think accordion came in maybe even a little bit later, but it was always the clarinet. It was always the violin. It was always some sort of guitar. He plays both guitar and mandolin for mm-hmm. sound. And Angie, this is, you know, over a year ago, she was like, I'm going to pick up the accordion and play that
she
as well.
She started picking that up a year ago?
A year ago is when she started talking about
pounds.
Doing that.
And
oh, wow.
It's really neat.
So she kind of comes in and we use her for that for To Life. We use it for the wedding celebration, which is traditionally when you would have had that sound. So we're really kind of playing into that. This was a fun one to do a lot of research on, which I liked.
Yeah, it's such a, you just feel good when you, I mean, I've always loved musicals, but this musical is just something about it. It really tears you up, and it makes you laugh, and it makes you get involved with them as if you were there in Anatevka, because it's such a close-knit thing. And this theater is three sides, you know, center and two sides, and it's very intimate. So you feel like you're part of their crowd instead of, like he said, you know, usually Fiddler is this huge auditorium or a Starlight kind of stage.
Oh, yeah, big stage.
Where you can't feel like you're part of their community. It's just, it's a moving, you know, for a musical, it's not all fluff. It really isn't.
So the Just Off Broadway Theater will be transformed into the Ukraine.
It's transformed to the Ukraine.
That's right. We're speaking with Michael Grayman, the artistic director and director of the show as well, and Nancy Nail, who plays several roles in the show. Probably the most fun one would be the matchmaker.
It is. Right? Of course.
Yeah. In the Spinning Tree Theater production of Fiddler on the Roof, opening this Thursday, April 23rd, at the Just Off Broadway Theater. It will be transformed into this community. Yeah. The Just Off Broadway Theater, by the way, is located at 3051 Pin Valley Drive. I'm glad they finally gave that little street a name.
Yes, yes. And when you call for tickets, we give you exact directions.
Well, good. That number would be 816-569-5277. And, of course, you can make your arrangements and get lots of more information online at SpinningTreeTheater.com. Speaking with Michael and Nancy on the show. Lots of tradition, a lot of feel. I would think the costuming job would be one of the more difficult ones, along with musical director.
Oh, absolutely. Kate Mott has really taken that for the dream sequence. She's of course influenced by Marc Chagall, which is the, I think in essence, it was his uncle that was the inspiration for The Fiddler on the Roof. His uncle used to sit on the roof and play the violin. And so I think the original influence came from Marc Chagall. And so she played with the colors of Marc Chagall. But then also just kind of the patterns. She's built and created.
She built a lot of the costumes.
Much of the costumes. And they're stunning.
Yeah.
They're stunning.
Yeah.
Matt Mott is our scenic designer again. Turn the Just Off Broadway into an intimate space where the audience is brought in, which is really great because that's also in the piece, in the script. He's always talking to God, but he's always talking to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so when you've got this, you really feel in this intimate space, you really feel like you are part of Anatevka. And Matt Mott has created that with his design.
Yeah, he does. He talks to God. Be prepared for that.
He does, yeah. He's like, you know, it's always that Schlemiel, you know, like, you know,
I question this, yeah, I question that.
Yeah.
Why
best.
Is this?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Best. Why am I asking right?
And as Nancy pointed out, but you know best.
That's right.
But he doesn't always seem to think that.
Yeah. Why am I telling you this?
You know. You're the one.
You're
thank
the
you.
One. Yeah.
Yes, the travails and all that go on with these people. My heart just bleeds for people in a situation like that. You just can't help it. Being pushed around all over the world since
the
BC days.
Yeah, beginning of time.
All over.
And it was time for an all-local professional production of Kansas because there's so much talent here. Kansas City was due for an all-local production.
And that's the thing about these guys, Andy Parkhurst and Michael Grayman. They cast people from here, and there is a plethora of actors here that enjoy and respect that because we want to work. We, you know, there's a lot of theaters that depend on that star quality. Somebody's got a New York credit, which is great, but they cast so many of us here, and it's just such a pleasure to work with them. I'm just very excited that it gets to be the first time and hopefully not the last.
Yeah, let's nail down some of the dates. Opens April 23rd. That's a Thursday. Runs through May 10th. What's the basic weekly schedule like for you?
First week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Those are all evenings. Thursday, Friday, 7:30. Saturday, 8 p.m. Sunday, 2 p.m. Then the following week, we start back up on Wednesday. So our Wednesday and Thursday shows are 7:30. Friday, 8 p.m., Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday, 2 p.m. And then the following week, we've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You want to talk about your Monday night performance?
Yeah, we have a Monday night performance happening the third week as well. So
And of course, with this change of times and the change of dates, it's even more important that you go to the website, spinningtreetheater.com, or you can call them at 816-569-5277 for more information about seeing the Spinning Tree Theater production of Fiddler on the Roof opening this Thursday. Oh, time is getting so close. What do you need to tighten up to get ready for?
We're in the tech process right now, but that's gone very, very smoothly. On Tuesday, we come back and we tech Act 2, which is much shorter than, you know, which is shorter than Act 1. Continue polishing things and giving notes while you do that. We get into dress rehearsal and, you know, first audience on Thursday. Right where we need to be right now.
Do people have fun with Nancy when they talk, well, how are you going to match me up? Do you want to match me up in real life?
Okay. We're going to have to do that off the air.
That's true.
I would think that would be something that people could really have fun with you about.
I would actually be pretty good at that, I think.
You think so?
I do. I don't want to do that, but I think I'd be pretty good at it.
There's a lot of responsibility with a job like that. But that's, yeah. I guess, did every village have a matchmaker?
Do what?
Did every village have a matchmaker?
I think they probably did. I think that comes from, again, that comes from Shalom Aleichem. You know, those are his stories. So these were all people that every town had their
Yenta.
And you mentioned earlier something I didn't know, based on stories about Tevye of the Milkman?
Yeah, Tevye the Dairyman and his daughters.
Oh,
so they're all Shalom Aleichem stories.
So that's where they got the basic idea for the story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sounds exciting for you. A big musical in the just off-Broadway theater. Is the J.O.B. big enough for the show?
Perfect size.
Yep.
Perfect size. Okay.
Perfect size.
Glad to hear that. Yeah. Spinning Tree Theater, their production of Fiddler on the Roof, opens this Thursday. Is that a preview? Well, people are available to see it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Official opening night, Saturday night. Yes.
Okay. So Thursday the 23rd with the official opening on then Saturday the 25th. And your show runs through May the 10th at the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Pin Valley Drive. And that is the south part of Pin Valley Park, just before you get to 31st Street, the somewhat underutilized Just Off Broadway Theater. I guess it's a perfect fit for you for this.
It is a perfect fit. Yeah. It's a great location too. I like being in the middle of a park. I love the light that streams in through the windows. It's very nice. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
The music will begin on Thursday night. Fiddler on the Roof, a production of the Spinning Tree Theater. I want to thank my guests for being with us. Michael Grayman, the artistic director of Spinning Tree Theater and the co-director of this program as well. And Nancy Nail, Yenta the Matchmaker. She's worked a lot of places. I've seen you at Quality Hill. I saw you. Where else did I see you?
Musical Theater Heritage.
Musical Theater
Starlight
Heritage.
Theater.
That's right. Starlight Theater as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael.
After our break, we will return. This is going to be a challenge for Michael. And you'll find out what I'm talking about when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Free Spray! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Free KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. In the wide open age of Skype, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram, paranoia about lack of privacy was bound to emerge. The filmmakers behind the creepy new thriller Unfriended cleverly exploit these fears in a truly unique way. They've designed a movie that exists only as an extended internet chat between five teenage friends that plays out on a single computer screen. An internet troll breaks in on their conversation. Or is the intruder a supernatural being? Yes, this bargain basement approach is gimmicky, but the fresh-faced cast members acquit themselves nicely, and the movie builds ongoing tension even when it sometimes lacks credibility. One can't help but think of other innovative cheapies like The Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity, and while it's not quite in the same league as those thrillers, you've got to give the minds behind Unfriended a few likes for originality. Also opening this week, James Franco, Jonah Hill, and Felicity Jones star in True Story about an accused murderer who took on the identity of a New York Times reporter. Monkey Kingdom is the latest documentary from the folks at Disney Nature. Kevin James returns in the inevitable and unnecessary comedy sequel Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. Acclaimed French filmmaker Eric Rohmer's latest is a romantic drama called A Tale of Winter. Actor Ethan Hawke turns director for a documentary about a concert pianist who quit to become an educator, called Seymour, An Introduction. Tom Hardy and Naomi Rapace star in Child 44, a serial killer thriller set in 1953 Russia. Cheatin' is an animated feature from the twisted mind of Bill Plimpton. Monsters 2, The Dark Continent, is a sci-fi sequel to the hit about giant invaders from outer space. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, host and producer of ArtSpeak Radio, inviting you to tune in to ArtSpeak Radio at our new time, Wednesday at noon to 1 p.m. That's right, from noon to 1 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
My name is Jung Y. Vini. I'm V. Tran. I'm a preacher's kid and the son of butchers. My family came to America with the clothes on our backs and we built from there. All my life, my family has asked me to tell our story, but I couldn't. Until now. Tune in Thursday, April 23rd at 8 p.m. to the local showcase to hear The Butcher's Son, live on KKFI 90.1.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey on down the street about half a block. Pretty good throwing distance. I mean, if you were standing right at the window, you might be able to chuck a rock down there and hit the front window of the Unicorn Theater, located just a little down the street, 3828 Main, where they are presenting the show with a name I really can't mention. But let's just suffice it to say it involves cockfighting. You know, you've all heard of roosters going at it. I believe it's illegal now in most states. Right. But it still is known to happen. People are prosecuted for it occasionally. And that's called cockfighting. And one of the words in that phrase is the title of this play, which opens at the Unicorn Theater on April the 22nd. That would be Wednesday. This is Monday. This is Wednesday. Hope you're getting ready. And it involves fighting, but instead of roosters out battling, they're fighting over people for some very interesting reasons. So here to talk about that show, two of the members of the cast, Molly Denninghoff, is with us. She is one of those Stevens College people who made their best effort to take over the theater community in Kansas City. Some of them are still here in town. Uh-huh. I guess you are. Yeah. One of the ladies is in New York now.
Oh, yeah. We're all over the place.
I know. They're spreading out and they're spreading out their troops and taking over for their next siege. A graduate of Stevens College.
That's
down
right.
There. Do they still have equine sciences majors?
Yes, they do. My sister actually majored in that, believe it or not. So there you go.
When I attended the University of Missouri, I remember some of the young ladies had saddles in their rooms.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I always found that kind of humorous.
Yes. Equestrian ladies.
That's right. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are probably show horses to this day.
Yes, absolutely.
As a matter of fact. But you have also appeared at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, at Starlight Theater, at the New Theater, Arrow Rock, mm-hmm. American Heartland Theater, others as well. Her biography mentioned her very first play, Little Billy Goat's Grove.
Oh, yeah.
I think when I was 11, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's a cute little
play. It's a kindergarten show.
That's right.
Didn't get enough.
I was 11, so a little after that, of course. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
Jacob Aaron Cullum is with us as well. He's from Wichita State. Since I mentioned Stevens, I have to mention Wichita State. He was in the Buddy Holly story at the New Theater. Hello again at Spinning Tree, the guest we just had on the air. He was in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, but the version at the Unicorn.
Right.
It's been played in several places around town. Has also appeared at Musical Theater Heritage. So welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Oh,
where do we start?
Well, it's young people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a battle of relationship. Mm-hmm. Battling over relationships is not a unique thing.
No.
Perhaps this situation is a little different, but maybe not. Maybe it happens a lot more than we really think it does. Who would like to lay out the basic storyline of your play?
I can do that.
Yeah, go for
it. It's essentially about...
Tell us how you fit in and what the basic story
is. Okay, well, I play the character John, and John finds himself in a situation where he is taking a break from his boyfriend, and he happens to
meet. So he's involved in a relationship with another man.
Right.
To this point.
Mm-hmm, up to this point at the beginning of the play, and he meets a girl, and they happen to fall in love. And so essentially they're in this situation where he's in love with two people, and that's how it begins. Don't give too much more away, but that's how it is. And then...
is there indecisiveness? Is this part of the fighting?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Major indecisiveness on John's part, which kind of drives my character, W, and his boyfriend, played by Zachary Andrews.
M,
we call him, kind of drives us up the wall because we just think that he should make a decision about who he wants to be with and essentially... making a decision about who he is, how to define himself, because up to that point, he's not sure how to define himself, sexually or otherwise.
Uh-huh. Is this, I don't know, I'm not really sure how to approach it. He's equally torn between the two?
Yes, yeah, he is.
The long-term relationship not working out as well as
right.
you would have thought.
Yeah, he kind of starts to pull away from that. You know, he wants to get away, and then he finds this girl. But you know, there's comfort in what he knows. So you know, he's in love with both people. And then, of course, the comedy. It's a comedy, British comedy. It comes when M, the boyfriend, decides he wants to get everyone together for a dinner party at the end, which is the third scene.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very, you know, the tug and pull of comedy between what are we doing here, all three of us.
Yeah, a very farcical, everyone's at dinner and let's hash it all out type of situation.
Does the British do that?
Yes, they do, don't they?
Yeah, is it Americanized at all, or do you just play it the way your director, Jeff Church,
right.
and Jeff, incidentally, for those of you who don't know, he's the artistic director of the Coterie Theater, one of the... Is it five best?
Yes. Time Magazine.
Yeah.
Best five, top five in the States.
So this is a little different subject matter
yes.
for him
That's
to
right.
take on. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure he had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've all had a lot of fun with it. It's been really great kind of getting in there. And I'm not sure if people are... you know, aware of this show, but it has no props, no set.
Really?
Yeah, it's just all about, and no miming. So, you know, even though we might be talking about drinking wine or eating dinner, we have no props or any
Nothing.
Miming action to really show that. So it's all about the dialogue, which even exemplifies even more the kind of the cockfight aspect of it, because we're kind of in a ring. The set is a ring, and so we're kind of going around in circles, so to speak, around this topic of John making this decision. And it's all about the words, it's all about the dialogue
sure.
and everything else. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting dichotomy, don't you think? Especially the ring, wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That adds another dimension to
it. Yeah, it's
absolutely.
In the round, you know, the audience on every side, because it is a cockfight ring, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. At what point, what is the thing that most causes the tensions to be heated? Let's say that. Is there any one incident that leads to that?
I could answer
Or is it
that.
Just your character's indecision about that? What do you think, Molly?
I think it's a lot to do with his indecision. And as the play goes on, both M, the boyfriend character, and myself, W, we become aware that John has kind of skirted the answer to, have you made a decision about who you want to be with? And he never really gives a yes or a no answer. And we kind of discover as the play goes on that, oh, he really hasn't made a decision. And we kind of lose it over that because he's kind of alluded that he has made a decision for one or the other. To both of us
yeah.
in secret, essentially.
But you never actually reveal the decision.
Right.
What's the hardest thing, looking at being introspective now, if you can be, looking into your character's psyche? Why is he having is he having a hard time letting go of the past and moving on? The lifestyle change is more than he really expected it would be.
Yeah, and the play you know, talks about sexual fluidity and what it
sure.
means to be what is it? Erotic plasticity was another way to put it.
Yeah. That would be a British way of saying
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, he. I think he's torn because he doesn't think, or he doesn't want to give in to what society says is normal, which is a label on it.
But if it's his personal decision.
Right.
People have a right to change their mind.
Sure.
It doesn't happen often, I will grant you, but there there have been instances.
Right.
Either way. And it can go either way, correct? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's a... I'm glad that you brought that up. There's this great moment in the play when John is speaking with his boyfriend about... And I'll paraphrase because I'm not Jacob, but he's talking about, you know, isn't it okay to like both?
Yeah.
Men
yeah.
and women.
Uh-huh.
And his boyfriend says, yeah, but not at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, it's there's that aspect too, you know, that you have to think about. Yes, of course, people change their mind every few seconds, but at the same time, I don't know.
Isn't your character feeling daunted by this? Do you really think that it's possible to change?
I think
from what we read, that's really not always possible.
Right. And, you know, there's lots of debate. We talk about that. You know, is it genetic? Is it all choice?
Sure.
You know, how much does that factor into it all? And I think my character, we've decided that she's just a slightly bit older than John by about 3 or 4 years. She's 28. And I think she's been married when she was younger and divorced. And I think she's at a place where she is comfortable with who she is. And she really has this great chemistry with this guy who just so happened to have just gotten out of a relationship with a man. And I think that she believes that it's possible for him to truly love her in the moment, whether or not mm-hmm. she thinks that he might love men as well. I think obviously she knows that he has and does and maybe will. But in mm-hmm. the moment, I think she believes that it's absolutely possible for their love to make it, so
sure.
to speak.
And what about your previous partner? Close to him, a lot of past there. Yeah, when people have a lot of past there, that adds another element to it.
Absolutely,
how does he feel about this? Does he think, well, this will never work between him and her? Does he think that?
No, I think he's hopeful, and you know he's struggling. It's an inner struggle as well as you know he's got these two things on the table. He finds himself in a place where it can be one way or the other, or you know, but essentially he wants both, you know,
and at the he wants both.
He does, and that's
we want it all.
That's where the comedy comes in, I suppose. You know,
yeah, it's such a heavy subject matter.
Right.
It's hard to think of it in terms of a comedy. Mm-hmm. How does the author work the comedy in?
Oh, in all those British quips.
Yeah, it's British, so you know it's witty. It's
words,
clever,
words, it's, words. To quote My Fair Lady, but
the style of the show. Pays credit to that because, you know, there is nothing except the words.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, it's just us in this ring fighting it out with our dialogue. So it's very, I mean, it's strong in that way, you know, that it words, yeah, words, words, words. So
sure. Well, when the British invasion people, and they do a series of shows usually at the Metropolitan Ensemble Theater, a little further down the street, I always ask them about the British sense of humor. Now, there seems to be, to me, from my perspective, there seems to be several different kinds of British humor.
Mm-hmm.
There is the very sophisticated Noel Coward drawing room type comedies, words, mostly words. Then you have the Monty Python or Benny Hill type comedy, which is beyond words. It's more physical. Is this a combination of both?
Yeah.
I would say so.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, especially in John's character. He's very torn. So in that small little ring that we're playing in, you know, he, as the play progresses, his physicalities get a little bit more John Cleese, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
we talked, working with Jeff, he wanted to, the blocking is different because it's not all naturalistic. You know, there's nothing to mess with. So we're kind of living our subtext physically. So yeah, I mean, as the play goes on and as I get them both in the same room, you know, I become more uncomfortable and that starts to show more.
It's more uncomfortable for you or for either one of them?
Well, you know, all three, I would assume, but especially John in that case.
Yes, very much so.
Sure. How did Jeff Church approach you with this. You knew about the play, I'm sure, before you even took the part, both of you. But how did he guide you and give you guidance into doing this? Any? Do you remember how
well,
he
we
did
kinda,
that?
It was kind of a thing we discovered all together. We kind of created as we began reading through and getting on our feet with it, just how to what the physical vocabulary should be and how to tell our story specifically with where we are, what we're doing, you know, status work being, you know, who's on top, so to speak, of the conversation, you know, who's winning, who's losing. So
I don't know if any of the listeners saw the wrestling season at the Coterie a couple years ago, but Jeff Church, the director, he wanted to work a lot with, as Jacob just said, status, which means, you know, I'm saying this line, but am I saying it because I'm weaker than you and I want to put myself in a place of power, or am I the person in power trying to make the person opposite me see that? So it's all about, you know, where you are placed in the ring. Perhaps the center of the ring is you have the power, or if you're on your knees or sitting down and the other person is standing up, you know, that says a lot about who has the power and who doesn't in the scenario, in the scenes. So it was really fun to work with that type of, as Jacob said, showing the subtext without words, with using our bodies. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. People probably think that the person with the power is the one that gets to make the choice. But I wonder sometimes if that's actually true. Because you're being pressured to make a decision.
Right.
Therefore, I would say you've lost your power. And as time goes by, you probably lose your influence with either one of the two parties.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's very flip-floppy in that way. But there is, like, who has the power? You know, that's what makes it interesting, of course. But, yeah, he does lose his, you know, he wants to make a decision, but
we don't want to give away
can't
the
quite
ending.
Be right.
I don't want to give away the ending, but things shift.
Like
They shift many times.
They often do. Well, I can imagine so. Different situations. The first time that they meet, is there, and people have asked me, is there actual fighting in the show?
For
the
my
title,
character?
The title lends one to believe that, but is there?
Well, the first time John and...
Physical fighting rather than mental jousting.
Right. No, there isn't actually. They don't even allude to physical fighting.
Okay.
Really.
So it's a mental fight.
Battle of emotions and wits and societal pressures.
Not necessarily a battle to the death. As would happen if two roosters fought.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it so cruel. Is this cruel on certain levels? Do you think it's a comedy, but is it also cruel?
Well, I think it's mentally difficult, which could lend itself to cruelty as one looks inward to decide who they are and if they really have to make that choice. I think society pressures us without even us knowing to make those decisions that, you know, if we're faced with the opportunity to go one way or the other, maybe we are suddenly unsure. And that could lend itself to some cruel words being tossed, cruel feelings about yourself, maybe self-sabotaging yourself. Yeah.
Well, one might say that about her. Is she leading herself into a situation that's never going to completely resolve itself?
Exactly. And I've thought about that as we've worked on this. You know, she's fighting for this pretty young relationship. I say young as in it's, you know, just a few weeks old when she realizes that, he's having to decide between me and another person. And I think she struggles with that, but as I said, you know, she was married and divorced, and she claims to not believe in the one or that we each have a one or a soulmate. But I think she, as their relationship progresses, I think she sort of realizes, well, what if he is the one? I should fight for this, right? But should she? I don't know.
I don't know. This battle for the heart and mind, I'll put it that way, opens April 22nd, runs through May 17th. They're fighting over relationship, not physically fighting, at the Unicorn Theater. The Unicorn is located just just behind me, really, just a half a block, 3828 Main. And if you MapQuest things, you need to know the zip code 64111. You can also call the Unicorn at 816-531-PLAY. If you need a numbers translation, that's 816-531-7529, extension 10. Or, of course, online at unicorntheater.org. We're speaking with Molly Denninghoff and Jacob Aaron Cullum. Two of the actors in the play, are there just the three, the two of you and the other gentleman?
There's a fourth, but mm-hmm. we will not
That's something that would give away too much?
A little.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So we won't pursue that.
But it's played by the fabulous Matt Rappaport.
Uh-huh. Ah.
Yeah.
Well, Matt's always a good performer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Always does a lot of good work around town.
Yes, he does.
Oh, some of the, what have you got, each of you got? Have plans beyond doing this play,
Jacob?
Are you booked for the summer in another one of those big musicals?
I have some. I am actually Spinning Tree Theater, who is just in here. I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be playing Tony in their West Side Story coming up in August, September. So,
well, congratulations for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Another battle.
Yes. Exactly.
Battle to the death in this. Then that one.
Yeah.
Take off on Romeo and Juliet. Of course, most of the you know that. Of course, a lot of the audience does. Good luck with that. What about Molly?
Yeah, I'm going up to Okoboji Summer Theater, which is affiliated with Stevens College, to do the Taffetas, kind of, you know, four-person gal group show. And then in the fall, I get to have fun at the new theater playing Alice in You Can't Take It With You.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're coming back with that. I saw it one other time at the new theater, actually, Don Knotts.
Oh,
was
great.
The feature role in the play.
Wonderful.
Yeah, a good, funny show.
Yeah,
good voice.
Wonderful.
You have a lot of musicals on your
I do.
On your resume. Do you prefer musicals?
I like them both. I'm like John in this show. I like them both.
You have a lot of them down there.
I do.
What did you play at New Theater, may I ask?
I was in the Buddy Holly story as well.
Oh, and you were as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I played Maria Elena. Puerto Rican.
did you read recently that they're opening up the investigation of that plane crash?
I did not.
Yeah, believe it or not, even after so many years, someone is concerned about that something might not have been right in the investigation.
Interesting.
They're looking at that again. So who knows? A sequel might be written.
Yeah.
Yes. Little do we know, they're all living in Iowa, jamming all together.
I can't help
doing the La Bamba.
I can't help but notice. Molly's also played the Arrow Rock Repertory Theater down there. What was that like? It's out in the middle of
nowhere. I'm from Columbia, and I went on field trips in my youth to Arrow Rock, to the Heritage Festivals, churning butter and all of that, and I have a very personal connection with it. And I went, and I was there for about 11 weeks, and it was beautiful, summer, everything you would hope in a summer theater experience, the grasshopper and fireflies and theater 24/7 and late nights with your friends, and it was wonderful.
The afternoon I went, we saw two shows the same day.
Yeah, so
an
there you go.
An afternoon matinee and then an evening.
Yep. Yeah.
Only one was a musical. The other was more of a Noel Coward drawing room comedy in the afternoon, then a musical at night. It was actually Company at night. It was Bly Spirit in the afternoon.
Oh, wonderful.
But it always runs like that for, a month? Does it run for a month?
Yeah, a couple weeks, I feel like. You rehearse during the day for one show, and if you're on board for the long haul, you rehearse for one show during the day, and then you're doing the show that you have rehearsed at night. You're doing performances of it, and it kind of runs in that cycle all summer long.
Yeah. Really. Is Okoboji like that?
It is like that, yep. You rehearse during the day for one show and perform in the nighttime.
Well, a big challenge for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of a mental duel.
It is.
So to speak.
Yes, very schizophrenic.
I'm just going to refer to it as the cockfight play. Mm-hmm. Opens April 22nd, runs through May 17th. Is there a basic formula, like Wednesday through Sunday?
Tuesday through Sunday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is at 7:30.
Yeah.
And the weekends are at 8, and yeah. Sundays are only matinee at 3.
Yes, yeah. So this week the previews are Wednesday and Thursday, then and also Friday, then the opening with Saturday, and then a Sunday afternoon matinee, 3 o'clock. You can get all this information at unicorntheater.org. Mm-hmm. And then for 1, 2, 3, 4 weekends consecutively.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. And just to mention, Tuesday and Wednesday nights, the Unicorn does this fabulous thing called Pay What You Can, which helps everybody experience art at the Unicorn. Mm-hmm. And if it's just if you feel like you can't really afford that full price ticket, come in, name your price, and they'll get you seated and you can enjoy the show.
Yeah. The play with no name. It has a name.
The non-radio name.
We've been asked not to mention it, which seems kind of silly in this day and age.
But it does.
We follow the rules.
Yes.
as we want to. But the show opens, of course, the 22nd in previews, which you can attend when you dial the Unicorn number, 816-531-PLAY or unicorntheater.org. I want to thank my guests for being with us. This was very interesting and a challenge. Jacob Aaron Cullum, who plays the role of...
John.
John.
That's John.
And Molly Denenhoff, who plays... It was a letter.
W.
Who plays the role of...
to woman.
Oh, I see. Well, very well, simplistic, yes. All along the way, in the Unicorn production that opens this week. A battle of the sexes, maybe a little different, more unique way.
Yeah, that's right.
Than we're used to seeing. Thank you so much for being, I know this was difficult, but thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. And enlightening us
on all that's going on. The Jazz Insider is next. He has some great things planned this afternoon. He always presents some great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3. The blues then from 3 to 6. KKFI is known for its jazz. And its blues today will be no different. Right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you.